Stop waiting for permission to start your business. Your idea is one step away, and Shopify can make it easy to make it happen. That's what we did at Crypto 101 and use Shopify to sell our book, and the rest is history. The thing I like about Shopify is it takes the scary part out of starting. You're not just sitting there trying to figure out a website, payments, checkout, inventory, all these little things that stop people before they even launch. When I think about building a storefront, the biggest thing is friction. You want someone to land on your page, like what you're selling, and be able to buy without getting stuck. That's where Shopify is huge. Shopify Checkout is built to help more customers finish their purchase. And when they come back, their details are already saved. One tap and they're done. The cool part is Shopify powers millions of businesses worldwide, from huge brands that you know, like Mattel and Gymshark, to small businesses just getting started. So whether you're building the next big brand or launching your first product, the infrastructure is already there. Once that part is handled, you can focus on the real work, building the brand, getting attention, and bringing people to your storefront so the business can grow. That moment when someone actually buys, that's when the idea becomes real. With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business, so go make it one. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/crypto101. That's a free trial at shopify.com/crypto101. August is a good time to clean up the closet a little bit. Get rid of the summer stuff that you didn't use, prepare for your autumn wardrobe, and upgrade the basics that you'll actually reach for every week. That's why I like Quince. They make fewer, better pieces that feel premium, but don't come with the luxury markup. For me, the piece I keep coming back to is the 100% European linen drawstring beach pants with the matching shirt. I love wearing them on beach vacations because they're easy, they're breathable, comfortable, and they look put together without feeling like I'm trying too hard. Throw them on during the day, wear them by the water, or dress up a little bit at night. That's the kind of staple I actually use because it has versatility. And that's really what Quince does well. They specialize in everyday pieces that work harder, like ultra-soft organic cotton tees and premium Magnolia and cashmere sweaters that can go from a casual workday to dinner out. If your basics are starting to feel worn out, Quince makes it easy to upgrade with premium denim and tailored chinos from just $60 with the fit, structure, and quality fabrics you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middleman, so you're paying for high quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a go-to for everything from hotel quality bedding and bath essentials to premium cookware and travel must-haves. Guys, you've been hearing it for so long now, how I tell you, you have to go to quince.com because the website is so fun for all the options that they have. It's a great website to go click around, and the prices can't be beat. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers. Go to quince.com/crypto101. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/crypto101.
All right, everybody, we are back at the Out East Summit. I've got a great guest, a true market operator and a legend in the space, if I do say so. Shileng Tang, who is the founder and managing partner of Monarch Asset Management. Shileng, thank you so much for joining
us. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
What do you think about the summit so far?
Amazing as always. Great event. I mean, I wasn't here as much yesterday. I heard it rain and pour, but today is just a beautiful day.
Yeah, totally.
Props to Josh.
What do you think of the quality of folks that are here relative to over the past several years of crypto conferences? Do you feel like it's cut from a different cloth?
Yeah, I would say a lot of familiar faces been in the space for a long time, but I would say every single year and, you know, now versus previous year, it's just a lot more institutional, right?
Yeah.
Institutional in the traditional market sense, not like institutional in the crypto native sense.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's dive into Monarch, you know, multi-strategy asset manager. You've been building in this space, options, derivatives, spot. Tell us about Monarch. What are you guys working on?
Yeah, of course. Monarch is basically a continuation of my first fund, which was Ledger Prime, which I ran from 2017 to 2022. Same approach, multi-strategy. The belief is that not any one vertical or strategy, sub-strategy will perform in all market environments. So we've diversified our portfolio of strategies into, as you said, derivatives, market making, arbitrage, funding bases, DeFi. So it's a collection of different strategies. And we service traditionally institutional LPs, family offices, private banks, fund of funds. And then lastly, we are part of FalconX. So FalconX owns the majority of the fund.
Okay, awesome. Right now, you know, we're recording this in the pits of a bear market. What's the biggest sleeve that you guys are running right now? Is it long, short, market making? And maybe if you can, as much as you can, give us a breakdown of what that allocation looks like.
Yeah, of course. I would say right now, the opportunity set sits in, I would say, a cross between DeFi and RWAs, right?
So interesting.
Historically, we've been much more crypto native, right? Just trading altcoins, Bitcoin, Ethereum, that complex. In a bear market, as you know, retail's gone, right? Capital isn't flowing as much there. Not as much speculative demand. However, as you've seen, AI stocks, memory stocks, like hyperscalers, a ton of demand and retail attention there. And now you have this convergence of these different assets coming on chain through TradeXIZUI, but also all the crypto native exchanges and platforms. And that's actually been a big driver of where open interest, volume, and attention has been. And so for us as crypto native firms, you know, obviously, we're not going to be able to compete with the Citadels, Millenniums of the world in NASDAQ, CME, traditional platforms and exchanges. Right. But once that those assets come to the crypto world, that enters the, I would say, the fragmentation of what crypto rails create. And that creates a lot of opportunity for us, right? So we've been focusing a lot more on that, whether it's long spot on NASDAQ, short perps on TradeXYZ and collecting the funding, right, as an opportunity, or just playing the dislocations on weekends, you know, when these assets are trading 24/7 on crypto rails and not trading on the CME or NASDAQ.
Yeah.
There's been some dislocations there.
Especially with the Iran war, right, all these strikes, you know, getting announced at, you know, 5 p.m. after market closes. It's kind of an interesting dynamic. And Hyperliquid is kind of the backbone of Trade.xyz, as far as I understand.
Yep.
What do you kind of view as the trajectory of these RWAs coming on chain? You know, earlier this year, we were around maybe $20 billion of assets on chain, sitting maybe around $30 billion outside of stablecoins, of course. But what kind of assets are coming on chain? You know, what are going to be first to be the quick movers?
Right.
And kind of what's that pace that, you know, people could expect?
Yeah, I think initially it was just pure derivatives and derivatives forms of these assets, right? That's the quickest. You list them. There's an Oracle, you know, there could be dislocations, but you don't have to worry about, you know, are these fungible versus the real assets on the other end. Over time, there will be more regulation and proper regulation, and these assets will actually be fungible, right? So the actual pure tokenized version where you can actually exchange, redeem basically for the actual stock on the TradFi side, that is growing faster and faster, right? And I think that's also where, you know, the opportunity set. So it's coming from both ends of the barbell, right? Initially, it's just pure derivatives, synthetic exposure, you know, sometimes it's a ton of dislocations, not true representation of the underlying asset, but retail doesn't really care in the short term anyway, right? But then for institutions, obviously, they need the real world tokenized version of these assets. And that's coming slower, but it's happening quicker and quicker with Securitize and others. So we'll probably, you know, converge at some point. And I think the scale is, you know, massive, right? And hopefully it's the best of both worlds where you have real assets, right? Not just, you know, pure meme coin and speculation, like real assets, but on, you know, blockchain rails, right? And you know, the kind of the best of both worlds in that sense.
Yeah, I've seen, I think there's about $100 trillion of stocks that trade every day, or $100 trillion of market cap. And we've seen folks like the, you know, Intercontinental Exchange and NASDAQ and ICE, or and NYSE, they are essentially investing in blockchain infrastructure. Is the play there to have two parallel systems, like their standard thing that they have that everybody knows and loves, and then, you know, a parallel system that's blockchain and you could go back and forth? Or is the grand idea to completely reinvent what is existing on blockchain rails and that's just the default?
Yeah. I think what you said, the latter piece, that's probably much longer term horizon, right? Perhaps. But I think shorter term, there will be two parallel worlds.
Yeah.
Like it's going to take, I mean, just look at how long it took institutions to adopt crypto as a whole and, and still being adopted, right?
Yeah.
I think the idea that people would migrate completely to a new set of settlement rails is far-fetched.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is encouraging that there is kind of this open playground where institutions like the ICE and others, NYSE, are experimenting. It's going to be in a parallel world, though.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but dinner sneaks up on me all the time. I'll open the fridge and realize I have no protein ready. And at that point, I'm not trying to go to the store, make a last-minute grocery run, and gamble on whatever meats or burgers are left at the store. That's why Omaha Steaks is a great freezer move. It's like having a trusted butcher at home and quality protein when you need it the most. Omaha Steaks has earned its reputation with over 100 years. It's the same beef trusted in kitchens across the country, shipped straight to your door. Steakhouse quality without the steakhouse prices. Your family will think dinner took hours, but it didn't, just minutes. And if you never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect place to start. You get 20 premium steak burgers made from 5 different cuts of steak. 4 filet mignon burgers, 4 New York strip burgers, 4 ribeye burgers, 4 brisket burgers, and 4 sirloin burgers. Guys, this is the altcoin basket of burgers right here. If me and Brian were on the rundown, we would be divvying these up 50-50 because you know how we like to grill in the summer. So you're not just getting a box of burgers, you're getting different flavor profiles, different textures, and real steakhouse style variety you can throw on the grill or cook up fast during the week. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with the promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. You know what slows teams down more than anything? It's not always the headcount, budget, or even the tools themselves. It's when the way work gets done lives in someone's head and never actually gets documented. Then someone new joins, a new platform gets rolled out, or a teammate leaves and suddenly everybody's doing the same process in a different way. That's exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Scribe is a workflow AI platform trusted by 94% of the Fortune 500. It captures workflows as they happen and turns them into step-by-step documentation your team can review and share. You just do the process like you normally would, and Scribe builds the guide as you go, capturing every click, step, and screenshot automatically. With our team being remote, I have definitely had moments where I've had to explain the same setup or process more than once to a colleague, and it always feels like something that should have been documented the first time. With Scribe, what could take hours of writing and cleanup can be ready to share in under a minute. Scribe also automatically redacts sensitive information like names, emails, and account numbers from screenshots. Admins can enforce that across the team so nothing slips through the cracks. Plus, anyone following the process can get real-time on-screen guidance showing exactly where to click inside the actual tool. Scribe doesn't just document workflows, it uses AI to suggest ways to improve them, helping you spot redundant steps and opportunities to simplify or automate. To see what Scribe could look like for your org, head to scribe.how/crypto101 and mention Crypto101 for your first month of Scribe Capture free on select plans. That's Scribe, scribe.how/crypto101. Everybody is talking about AI right now, but the AI that actually matters is the kind that saves you time, helps you make smarter decisions, and takes work off your plate. And if you're running an e-commerce business, shipping is one of those things that can either keep you moving or completely slow you down. That's why I like ShipStation. It's an end-to-end order fulfillment platform built for e-commerce businesses, and its AI is trained on decades of real shipping data from billions of shipments across the world. So instead of juggling a bunch of different tools, ShipStation helps you stay in control. It can alert you when your stock is low, recommend the best carrier selections and rates, automate tasks, and help you save time as you grow. You also get inventory syncing across sales channels, automatic rate shopping, a branded returns portal, and integrations with accounting and CRM software, all in one place. If I were running an e-commerce store, this is exactly the kind of tool I'd want, because once the orders start coming in, you don't want shipping to be the thing that's holding you back. Over 1 million businesses have trusted ShipStation to optimize and scale their shipping. The sooner you switch, the sooner you start saving time and money. Get started with ShipStation today and get 60 days free at ShipStation.com with code crypto. That's ShipStation.com, code crypto. ShipStation.com, code crypto. Taxes and fees apply.
It seems like it's almost like the revolution from open outcry pits to electronic trading. Yeah. You know,
open outcry still exists.
Yeah, it still exists, yeah, right? Yeah. It's like it does a different amount of volume than it used to. Right. And then even the ETF kind of replacing the mutual fund. Like mutual funds still exist. Right. They just have outflows every year going towards ETFs. And so I could see a world exist just like you described where you have the traditional stuff, but you know, fast money, you know, sharps, you know, they're opting for the better, more efficient system, right, where you could trade 24/7. And it almost might even be a portfolio manager or the CEO of this big firm, you know, their mandate, like you guys aren't getting weekends off anymore. Right. Like your systems could trade 24/7. We're managing risk for our clients 24/7, not after the bell rings.
Exactly.
Which is a huge draw, you know, to a guy like me. I'm thinking like, you know, always, and I'm going to ask you this question, but you know, thinking about the benefits of digital assets, right? So in your view, when you talk to your investors, or just hear from others, what do you view besides, again, because the low-hanging fruit is instant settlement, right?
Sure, sure.
24/7, 365 trading. But what's like the other draws of real-world asset tokenization?
Yeah, I think a big part of that maybe isn't the sexy part of all this blockchain tokenization, but we're, even if you're looking at traditional markets, what underpins traditional financial markets is like the repo market, right?
The repo market. Tell us what that is.
And it's basically like short-term, sometimes overnight, intraday, or just general very short-term financing, right?
Okay.
There's a lot of assets in the traditional world that, you know, gets rehypothecated or collateralized as collateral, basically, or equity. Those different forms need to get moved across different PBs for settlements, trading, et cetera.
What's PB?
Prime broker.
Prime broker.
Yep. Yep. And so that process, there's a repo market that, you know, just looks at a set of portfolio collateral and assets and determines, you know, is this creditworthy, is not creditworthy? Can we provide short-term cash financing for settlement so that, you know, because settlement takes like 1 day, 2 days, sometimes even longer for other assets. It's really the repo markets are the underlying, like I would say, grease or oil that streamlines a lot of the financial markets, right? Like in 2008, you had the repo markets were frozen, right? So it wasn't...
Nobody was trusting each other to lend to each other.
And like sometimes it's kind of... There's like two things. There's solvency. Like is your collateral... Are you actually bankrupt? Or is it like a liquidity issue?
Yeah.
Right? And a lot of times financial catastrophes are less about solvency, more about like liquidity issues, right? And often when you peel under the hood, like a lot of it's driven by the repo markets, right? And so I think that's a big area that the crypto markets and blockchain in general can really help streamline and solve, because you have this idea of like instant settlement, collateral is transparent, you can settle things a lot faster. And I think, you know, as more and more assets come on chain, that will only make the general repo market a lot more streamlined as opposed to what it is currently.
Yeah. So. And do you kind of foresee that being like, you know, people talk about AI increasing the GDP, increasing the productivity, you know, having this deflationary effect? And do you kind of, in robotics, kind of in a similar way, do you see tokenization on that scale of like, if we tokenize, if we have these markets more efficient, we could actually have a society that's more productive?
I would say yes and no, right? I think like not everything that can be tokenized needs necessarily to like get tokenized, right? I think like, you know, it's kind of funny, like even looking back since like 2016, 2017, every boom and bust cycle, the tokenization has always come back to like the common, like tokenizing in blockchain versus like speculative. Like, yeah. Even 2017, people were talking about, oh my God, like tokenization, like let's tokenize real estate, let's tokenize art.
Let's tokenize our vineyard.
Exactly, yeah. But like it hasn't really happened. I think part of that, you know, maybe part of it is like the technology hasn't caught up then, but also like, is there actually like supply and demand for it, right?
Yeah.
And, like, so I think that's still to be determined, right? Financial assets like stocks, commodities, precious metals, fine. But like large parts of other illiquid assets, maybe there actually just isn't much like actual demand for it, right?
Yeah.
So again, we're sitting here and talking about like tokenization and blockchain, but I think we're starting to see more and more product market fit than we ever have historically.
Yeah. And you know, one of the themes that I've kind of heard from the conversations going on at the summit have been this divergence between increasingly more attractive fundamentals, valuations that are, you know, obviously down because of prices, but just bear market sentiment in the retail market completely washed out. You could look at funding rates. There's hardly any speculation. You know, what do you make of just the market environment that we're in right now? Kind of how did we get here? Where is it that we are, and what could kind of kick us out back into a new bull market?
Yeah. You know, it's not too dissimilar from like other cycles again, right?
Yeah.
Like history repeats itself. It's human nature. Like 2018 was kind of the, you know, hangover from the ICO boom, right?
Sure.
In some ways, like we saw a ton of like meme coins in 2024, 2025 got rugged, right? Some people made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Most people probably lost a lot of money, right?
Yep.
Kind of the pump and dumps, different coins, like all these like tokens that ICO, or not ICO, but like launch, and then it's just constant monthly vesting and selling, et cetera, et cetera. So there's not enough marginal dollar to support all the different tokens and speculative assets that rush the markets in 24, 25. So we're seeing a lot of overhang of that, right? And then you couple that with the fact that now you have prediction markets and sports gambling and
AI stocks
and
going
AI stocks, and that's everything, right? It's just like, it's the attention economy.
Yes.
And unfortunately, just so many other things that are happening, right? Yeah. It doesn't mean that it'll ever not come back, right? I mean, I think we're hopefully starting to see a little bit of capital rotation back at, you know, some point, right?
Yep.
Memory stocks, like, semis have traded, cooling off a little bit, starting to see the trenches like with Ansem and others like pop up a little bit again, right?
Yeah.
So it, I fundamentally believe it will come back, but it is the, you know, attention economy.
Yeah. You know, kind of on this idea of, you know, the trenches or just tradable, you know, the tradable universe of crypto, what indicators do you look at, you know, across the spectrum? I mean, I'm not sure if you're a technical analyst guy, or if you like looking at, you know, options curves and funding rates, but what's kind of like, if, and again, what you do, but also what could a guy at home do who doesn't have access to, you know, $1 million data sets?
Yeah, I think it, you know, when you're trading or investing, I think you, for anyone out there, like personally, I think you have to set your time frame a little bit, right? Like, are you trading intraday or are you thinking more about cycles or months, et cetera, right? Yeah. So like if you develop more like cycles and, you know, more longer term monthly, then I think you want to look at general flows, especially let's say like old wallets, right? Like what are the old wallets? Like a lot of them were distributing and selling coins middle of 2025, fall of 2025, like long-term holders, long Bitcoin whales, tracking those wallets or clearly selling Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
And now they're actually have been accumulating in the past month, right?
Yeah.
So I think like that tracking, like cycle after cycle, has been a pretty good like indicator, right?
Yeah.
And then you overlay that across maybe, like open interest, volume, like short term, like technical, sure. Like you can look at, okay, every, you know, every bear market cycle goes below the 200-day moving average or something, et cetera. Like just some technicals maybe that helps you with like entry.
Yep.
But I think generally, it's flows that drive like price action, right?
Yeah.
And maybe this cycle is a little bit different because you have ETFs and that's a little bit harder to track.
Yeah.
But you can still track, you know, BlackRock, ETF, like inflows, outflows, the general trends on a week-to-week basis, right?
Yeah.
So know your time frame and understand like the flows and then track that.
Yeah. And would you say like in terms of like data sources, you want to give any, like Glassnode is the one that I, that comes first to mind where you could track long-term holders.
Yeah.
But not many other data sources are out there, that track this kind of unique data set. Which ones do you use?
I mean, the tie is great.
Yeah. The tie. Yeah, sure. There we go.
I mean, they're institutional at least.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. I mean, not all retail participants can use like the tie, right?
Yeah.
But you know, I think almost all platforms and products out there have a retail version, right? Whether it's just like Arcum or Natsin or others, right? So the good thing about crypto and blockchain in general was it was created with the fundamental approach of openness and free. Like, right, data is free to, maybe not everyone has the ability to scrape that and interpret that data, but it is out there, right?
Yeah.
Like whether it's market data from exchanges, whether it's blockchain data, it is fundamentally there. And hopefully using AI tools now, like people will have a better ability to access that data set.
Yeah. I'd love to kind of talk about the binary between investing and trading in crypto. And I feel like you're probably both, because I was talking to Josh actually from the TIE. He says you're a prolific venture investor as well. But also, you know, you're a prolific trader. And so in crypto, like, you know, there's a lot of trading opportunities where you don't care if this thing, you don't care the trajectory of this coin or this asset over the course of 10 years. You just care about the next day or whatever. But, you know, I think a lot of folks who are watching are more in the investor camp. They're like, hey, you know, I got my day job. I'm not going to spend all day and all night trying to out-trade a guy like you who has the systems. And so what can you tell the average Joe about investing in crypto? And again, not saying, oh, buy this coin, buy that coin. But what kind of coin do you find that you would be willing to put, you know, your money in long term? What and what is that value capture method?
Yeah, I think... For anyone, I think like one advice in general is, and it's a common piece of advice, but like, you know, have strong opinions, but like loosely held. Right?
Sure. I think
like crypto has evolved like so much. Coins that rocketed in 2017, 18 or 21, 22, like sometimes are just like completely worthless.
Yeah, they might not come back from
that. Yeah, exactly. So like, I think in general, we are probably reaching an inflection point, and hopefully clarity passes, maybe not, regardless of people realizing that historical governance tokens or meme tokens, et cetera, like some have value, but you know, they're not necessarily long lasting.
Yeah.
And if you do believe the space will become a proper institutional asset class, and eventually coins are actually going to be probably just similar to like equities in some ways, right? Yeah. Like maybe there'll finally be that link between revenue and usage and cash flow back to token demand and, you know, like actual like proper demand, right? Yeah. Like if that link actually, you know, exists, then capital will flow to those type of tokens, right? And so, you know, looking back in history, exchange tokens, right? Like Binance, Hyperliquid, it demonstrated that there is actual value to these tokens, right? And how that accrues depends, you know, some is buy and burn, others are whatever, dividends, et cetera, right? Or distribution. So yep. I think if we really think about long-term and not just the short-term speculative demand, then just focusing on actual tokens that you can clearly track like the revenue and usage and fees, I think you're generally safe buying those tokens, you know, if you have like a 2-3-4 year horizon.
Yeah. No, that makes a ton of sense. One of the other big winners this cycle has been prediction markets. And I'm not sure if, you know, Polymarket's going to come out with a coin or if Kalshi will come out with a coin. They've got equity holders, right? Yeah. But I'm curious from your strategies, if and how you do hedge positions or speculate long or short on the markets through prediction markets. Yeah. Is that something you guys facilitate?
Yeah, we haven't directly traded prediction, but we have started to ingest a lot of that data, right?
Yeah.
Because you have these up-down contracts, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, hourly, et cetera. Those are just basically binary options, right? And so you can just trade those prediction markets and arbitrage it against actual crypto native options or using like the linear perps, right?
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lot of overlap there. I think like the broader piece is like, if you are a fundamentally driven hedge fund, let's say, and this actually was public, I think it was like Arca and Galaxy maybe printed the trades, I forget who, but it was definitely Arca. But basically, they have a lot of exposure to tokens that benefit if the Clarity Act gets passed, right?
Oh, interesting.
And so if you know these tokens are going to benefit or get hurt if it doesn't get passed, well, you can hedge that portfolio exposure with, you know, the Polymarket, Clarity Act, like prediction market, basically.
Yeah.
Right. I think right now it's trading about 40%.
Right.
Like 40%, yes, basically. And so, you know, if you know there's going to be a lot of downside in your holding portfolio, well, you should buy and hedge, like saying that Clarity Act won't pass. And if it doesn't pass, you at least, you know, hedge your portfolio in that regard.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. It's something that, you know, I know it's starting to come into the mainstream now because my dad's asking me about prediction markets, which is like, you know, he'll always kind of ask me towards the end of a cycle, like, oh, what do you think about AI? It's like, okay, great. Now AI is popping. What do you think about crypto? Crypto's right. Popping. So you just started asking me about prediction markets. So maybe the yeah. Wind might come out of the sails a little bit there. But I kind of wanted to round out the discussion on the venture side. And, you know, what do you look for in a team or a project that makes you say, hey, I'm going to put my personal money behind this? What's your history in venture kind of looked like when you basically said yes or no?
Yeah, I think, I would say 2-3 different dimensions, right? Like oftentimes, and this is something that I learned before I got into crypto and post my trading TradFi world, I just started a fintech company, co-founder, took it through Y Combinator. So learned
nice.
A lot of lessons there and at least like how they approach like investing, right? And obviously it's changed tremendously, you know, back then. Our batches were way smaller than what it used to be, right? But I think like one thing that stuck out was just, you know, when you're investing pre-seed or seed, it's really not necessarily about like the product, right? In some ways, you kind of take the philosophy that like you're just looking for trends. And generally, the saying is like a rising tide lifts all boats, right? Like as long as you're kind of investing in the right trend and right sector, you don't have to always invest in like the best team or best product necessarily, right? Like you can kind of just like, at least like a competent enough team probably will be able to at least eke out, you know, some gains, right? It's yeah. kind of like—
And so long as you get it at the right price.
Or Polymarket and Kalshi, right? Like yeah. they're not necessarily have to be investing the best. two is often like, I think it just comes down to like perseverance and the team, right?
Yeah.
Like there's so many, like the Airbnb history, you know, Brian Chesky, like they love to talk about, like YC at least love to talk that story, right? The initial idea of Airbnb was like terrible. It was ridiculous, stupid. But like through sure, like perseverance is pivoting and testing and et cetera, like knowing you're a customer. Ultimately, like they succeeded, right? And I think like there's so many examples of that through any vertical where the initial idea and like theory was wrong,
right?
But at some point through just, you know, the ability to iterate, they achieve like, so I think a lot of it goes into not necessarily just like the actual idea. Like, yes, that's important. Like, are they actually on the right path? But as long as they're on the right path, then it becomes more about judging like the team and the character.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. Last question is, what's the next trend? Is are all the trends already existing, right? AI, crypto, yeah, that kind of stuff? Or is there something that, you know, you're personally investing in that maybe a lot of us haven't heard about yet?
Yeah, I think I've been doing a lot of work into, I haven't made my judgment in terms of like whether this is actually going to take off as a very liquid market or not. I hope it does. It's basically compute trading, right?
Compute trading, okay, great.
There's been a lot of work done, I think, like Brett with Architect, either just launched or
yeah,
have to launch like very shortly. There's a few other markets that are launching with it. So I think CME and others have announced the intentions to market.
Incredible.
It's a difficult market, right? But if it does take off, I think it could be a completely new like asset class, right? And
yeah,
as a trader, like that's what we want to see is new asset classes, a lot of dislocations, no prior history. You know, the quants necessarily can't just like step in day one and just like arb everything out, right?
Yeah.
So that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And so I don't mean to head fake you and say that was the last question and hit you with another follow-up, yeah, but it's a super fascinating topic. And I don't think a lot of our listeners really know about compute trading and you know, I think everybody knows like, you know, oh, in order to query Claude, I see it says, okay, it's used 100 tokens. Now it's 1,000 tokens. And is that what you're saying? Like speculating on the price per query or what is this
more I would say like on the institutional front, right? So like different institutions will require like different, I guess, amount of larger, well, not like individual like me and you,
like an Amazon,
yeah, yeah, like they would need the ability to hedge the exposure in businesses to how much like spend they are in terms of machinery.
Oh, interesting.
And so
just like a farmer needs to hedge his crops,
almost like in some ways maybe like electricity futures back in the day, or like there was a period of time where Bitcoin miners wanted to trade like hash rates, for example,
yeah, right?
Because they had the direct exposure to hash rate and they wanted to have a market to hedge like their hash rate, right?
Fascinating.
Unfortunately, that never developed. Hopefully, compute markets are more successful than hash rate markets, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not, but that's kind of like the analogy.
Interesting. Well, Shalang, this was awesome. You've been very generous with your time, and enjoy the rest of the summit. I hope everybody at home watching enjoyed this conversation. Shalang Tang, managing partner and founder of Monarch Asset Management. Where can people kind of follow along on your journey? Are you big on LinkedIn, X?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me on X. It's literally just Shalang Tang, or it's in
the one and only.
Yeah, check out our website, you know, monarch-am.com. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Shalang. Everybody at home watching, hope you enjoyed. We'll see you back with some more great guests.
All right, take care.
Take care.